to Cyber Therapy. My name is Ashley Lee, Senior Marketing Manager at Jupiter One, and I've got my co-host here, Tyler Shields. You want to say hi?
What's up, Ash? How are you doing?
I have myself
a little snack today.
Very nice.
And I did good. You'd be proud of me. I actually got trail mix instead of Doritos, which were literally side by side, and I did the right thing. I got trail mix today.
Very nice. You chose a really good hearty snack there.
Yeah, but it's the one with chocolate.
Costco packs?
It's the one with chocolate in it. So.
Oh, lovely. That's the perfect one. The only one that I will ever get. Awesome. Well, if you're new around here, thank you for joining us on Cyber Therapy. We usually live stream every other Tuesday. So the first Tuesday and third Tuesday of the month at this time, every time. We usually like to talk to security and IT professionals who are in the industry doing good stuff, and we just like to get to know them, get a peek into their minds. And today I'm really excited about our guest because he's a good time friend of mine. We used to work together we still work together. And so I'd love to bring onto the stage Tony Ramirez.
Yay.
Hey.
I feel like a Muppet whenever we do that. Yay.
Welcome to the party, Tony. How's it going?
It's going great. This is a long time coming. I know we've talked about podcasting and stuff for several years, Ashley.
Yes. From everything under talking about anime to platypuses to, is that the correct like plural version of platypus?
Platypi? Platypus?
Is it platypus? I don't know.
Like buffalo, maybe. I don't know.
I'm going to have to look that up. I'll get back with you in a minute.
Awesome. So for those of you who don't know, Tony is a customer success engineer at Jupiter One, but he has had many years in security, and we are going to dig into how he got into cybersecurity this time around. But first, what I'd like to ask everybody on this is an icebreaker question. I think this is something we started talking about last week or last episode that we would start doing. And so the icebreaker question for today is, if you could relive any year, what year would you choose and why? And now I know most people are like, oh God, the last 3 years have been horrendous and bloody, bloody blue. But, you know, maybe you would want to relive it just for good stuff in your year. I don't know. So what are your thoughts?
Wow. That's a tough one. Tony, do you know off the top of your head what year you'd pick?
Honestly? Okay. So to your point, Ashley, I think I would pick this year. This year has been pretty great. It's been a lot of fun stuff has happened. A lot of new experiences. A lot of new learning has happened this year for me. And, I got to travel a little bit here or there. Not really anywhere far, domestic travel. But
there's love in the air.
We're getting a little bit of information here.
It has been a great year. That's all I'm going to say. Been fun.
Awesome. Tyler, what about you?
What about you?
Oh, me? It would be 2013. 2013 is the year when a bunch of us young 20-somethings were just meeting, and it was a time of our lives where we had the capacity to stay out till 3 o'clock in the morning, 6 days out of the week, and still hold down jobs. It was also the year that I met my husband, my now husband. And it was just a really fun, really fun year, honestly. It all started with we had a dinner, I think of like 30 of us, at Hukilau in San Jose, if you've ever been there. And then we were all just having a grand time, and Tang had the idea to go to a bonfire, do a bonfire down in Santa Cruz. And so we ended up going down to Santa Cruz. Like, we didn't even get to supplies till like 11 p.m. So you can imagine we stayed out rather late, and just had a really good time. And then like that just cascaded into a whole bunch of other events that led to late nights and jolly memories. So yeah, that's my year.
That sounds like a good year.
Mm-hmm.
So it wouldn't be the years you lived in Ohio, right?
Definitely not. I forgot about those years, actually. Why did you have to remind me? Actually,
nobody likes Ohio.
The highway
currently in Ohio, they don't even like Ohio.
The highlight of me being in Ohio was that I got to bond with my nieces and my sister-in-law and her husband. because they live like 2.5 hours away from where we were. So we basically went there every weekend we could to escape the boredom of Ohio. Oh.
Sounds like a good year. Mm-hmm. 2013, I had 2 kids.
Mm-hmm. Who were under 10? Under 10. Oh, yeah. 2 kids under 10,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Yep. Wow. You must have had your hands full.
I don't know. I don't have a favorite year because I can come up literally like every year. I mean, it's definitely years I hated. But I think if you go to any year, I can pick out a good thing that made that year a great mm-hmm. year. So it's hard for me to pick. Like, I mean, I got the birth of my children for 2 separate years. You know, I got my wedding. This year's a good year. I'm getting my 20th anniversary is next Wednesday. So, sorry, scratch that.
Tomorrow.
Tomorrow Wednesday, not next Wednesday. Tomorrow Wednesday.
Don't mind him, Kelly. We've got him under control.
I'm fully prepared. I just had a mental calendar in my brain. Yeah, I mean, so there's wonderful things every year, right? Like when you get to 20 years of marriage, you get to flash back, and we're actually going to be eating dinner tomorrow night at the same place we had our first anniversary. So that's pretty cool. Yeah, I don't have a set year per se. I can pick out certain life events that I think were wonderful life events, and you can pick any of those years. How's that for mm-hmm. an answer?
It's a very good
variety. Top apple, you'll take it.
Yeah, I'll take it.
Awesome. You gotta trend positive. You just have to keep trending positive.
Correct. That's right. And certainly there were some down years in there, right? Year one of pandemic being one of them. But in general, my highs are higher and my lows are higher than previous lows. So you're going in the right direction. That's all you really want.
Yeah. Cool. I will say the beginning of the pandemic actually was when I started working with you. So I wouldn't actually even
That's why it's one of the worst years.
Thanks. Appreciate that. All righty. So let's get into the meat of things. Tony, would love to just hear from you.
Before you get started, nobody knows who Tony is.
I already said earlier, Tony's our customer success engineer. He's bomb. And you get to hear more from him in just a little bit. We're going to get into his...
Did I totally space out on that part of your discussion?
I think you did.
Well, all right. I'm not surprised. That's what happens when you get old. Sorry, Tony.
So are you actually trending up?
No.
Maybe not mentally.
I think I'm at the peak and trending down going forward.
Hey, the more you forget, the better you feel.
Exactly. I love the way that sounds. Sign me up. Okay, well, back to the fact that everybody does already know Tony. Let's go ahead and continue, Ash.
Awesome. All right. So for those of you who don't know, Tony actually got his degree in physics. So I have to ask, why did you choose to get your undergrad in physics?
Yeah, that wasn't really my original intention. So, like, if I had to go back in time and I had to, like, go all the way back to, like, my high school self leaving high school, I was in marching band. I was in jazz band. I played guitar in jazz band. I played saxophone in marching band. And, I did some other, like, school activities, whatever. But ultimately, like, was I a great student? No. Like, and I also can fully admit that, like, I had no clue what I wanted to do with my life when I left, like, high school. And I think that's true for most people. Like, I think that's a normal experience. I think I told people, like, oh, I'm just going to become, like, an astronaut ninja or something. And that was, like, that was literally what I wrote down. Like, we had, like, a, like, end of year, like, band, like party, and they asked everyone, like, what are you going to be doing? Where are you going? And I was like, I have no clue. Like, I had zero clue what I wanted to do. And I wrote that down. For a while, I wanted to be a musician. And then, and that was really what I thought was going to do it for me. And for anybody who's been a musician, I think there's a moment where you realize it's a uncomfortable and not really a well-paying life. And I think there was something that happened to me that I won't unpack too much. But, you know, like I thought to myself, like, I kind of want to be comfortable. And I was like thinking like, well, I'm going to do something in school. So my parents really wanted me to do medical field. And I liked math and science. I liked tech. I liked all these things. But I didn't really like, if you know me, I'm not really a like person who likes to focus on one big thing and just like get into that little thing. I'm more of like a jack of all trades. And somebody kind of convinced me that, oh, like, you know, physics is cool. I think it was because I took this physics class in my undergrad, and for something about it just like clicked in my mind that like, oh, physics is great. Like, I learned to problem solve. I learned to talk about complex things. And I learned all those things. Like, I learned how to problem solve. I learned how to talk about complex things. I did research. I love research. Like, research, doing research is like super fun. Digging into a topic, just like I was just saying, digging into something specific, but then kind of thinking about it in a bunch of different ways is fun. But then I graduated and I right away realized like there's like kind of two paths you can go down. Like, you can go into higher ed, or you can see if you can, you know, go into education. Like, higher ed being like you go get your graduate degree and then your PhD and you work for either some postdoc person and you kind of like grovel with them for a long time. And, you know, it's frankly something that sounds unappealing, because in my mind, getting out of grad school or getting out of my undergrad, I thought like, there's like a PhD program sounds kind of like servitude to some degree. Like, you're a serf to this higher ed person, and they're telling you like, you're going to work on this thing and you're going to be interested in this one concept and, you know, run with it.
Which isn't so bad if you're actually aligned and like want to research it.
Yeah.
But if you're just in it to get a PhD, right, for the paper, it's just sounds like a miserable extended education.
And that was what I was missing. You hit it on the nail there. There was that, like, I didn't have a problem I wanted to solve. Like, there wasn't anything that was convincing to me as like, this is the problem you want to solve. I did like problem solving, and I did like digging into these concepts, and they were fun. Like, I think, you know, you can ask me about these topics, and back then, and I could have talked about, you know, like, oh, like particle and energy physics, because, you know, I live in Chicago, so like, you have the labs around here, you have all this stuff. Like, I could have said like, oh yeah, these concepts are interesting, but like, it wasn't anything I was like, oh, like, I want to do that for the rest of my life. No. So what ended up happening to me was I got an IT job. I think you really can't get like a there's not a physics job with an undergrad unless I go teach, and that didn't really seem appealing to me either, because TLDR, my mom was a teacher and I've heard all too much about it, and I have a lot of respect for educators, but it was something that sounded a burden. Like, I have a lot of respect for teachers. It's hard, and I knew that wasn't for me. But I got into IT, and what I ended up having happen to me was somebody close to me, my uncle, told me, you should get into cybersecurity. Like, you should try to get into cybersecurity, because that is what's at. This was more than 10 years ago. At the time, he was working on like the Chicago Tribune's IT team. They had like this data center in there. You know, like at the Tribune offices, and like back then it was like, you know, the golden age of newspaper. So like, you know, like hearing that from him, like he had like, oh yeah, like this is where things are going to go, get into it. Like, look at these certifications, look at all this stuff. And it's funny, cause like some of the stuff he mentioned, like I think back on it, like, oh yeah, like that's still like relevant. Like getting a CISSP is still relevant today. I don't have that, by the way, but then he mentioned some other certifications whose names I will not name that are really not as relevant in today's like new expanding like tech stack. So it's interesting.
But yet people still get them. So do you think is driving people to still get certifications? I feel like there's two camps, right? There's like the anti-certifications and like why? If you know what you're doing, you know what you're doing, right?
Yeah.
But then you have the people, the other side, where people feel like they have to do certifications in order to get anywhere in their job search. So curious on your thoughts on the relevance of certifications, even though you are saying there are a bunch that are probably not as relevant. Like, if it's supplementary and helpful for you finding a job, like, that's probably what keeps them in business, I'm guessing.
And Tony, you've known Ashley for a long time now. She wouldn't be chucking you under the bus with a controversial question now, would she?
Oh, of course not. Yeah. Let's talk about that, because I'm gonna use a metaphor. You know, knowledge is like a bar of steel, and experience is the blacksmith that forges that steel into something useful. And that's, you know, that's a very abstract way to say, like, yeah, experience is the best teacher, but not everybody gets the opportunity to obtain that experience on the regular. I feel mixed about it, because as Tyler was alluding to, I am somebody who's, like, in my former life, I created a certification with somebody else on this podcast. And yeah. That's
we created a training training course, not necessarily a certification. I think those are two different things. But anyways, we will not get into the weeds there in terms of discerning certifications that require a test versus certifications you completed something. Those are very different types of certifications. So
yes. I don't want to discount certifications, because I do think there is some validity to certifications. But I also think there are some certifications that are historically given a bad rap that maybe deserve it. I'm not going to say which ones. I think there are places where, like, you know, training is an important element of whatever you're doing. But, like, I'm a big, like, I need to be hands-on. I have to take whatever I'm learning and turn it into something, you know, like, practical and workable. Like, that's kind of been my experience. It's hard to do something unless there's a function behind it, you know? Like, you have to have an end result goal to make learning that topic worth it.
So how did you make the jump then from IT into cybersecurity? Your uncle is telling you you should do it. It's all the craze. Because I heard 10 years ago, everybody was like, yeah, that's where you're going to make a buttload of money. You should really get into cybersecurity, right? What actually got you over the fence into an actual cybersecurity role?
So remember how I was, like, bad-mouthing grad school just a moment ago? I went to grad school. And I went to Illinois Tech, Illinois Institute of Technology. And I enrolled in their cyber forensics and security program. At the time, it was a 2 years master program. I think I turned it into a 2 years master program because I took probably more classes than I should have.
So you went ultra nerd mode.
I mean, like, I'm naturally ultra nerd mode, so I didn't have to go it. It was just mostly finding out what worked for me. So I'll say this: there was a teacher who kind of pitched it to me. This guy, Kevin Vaccaro, told me, like, oh, like, if you go to this program versus this other program, you're going to do way more hands-on, like, you're going to be doing research, you're going to be doing, like, some stuff that's really practical. And he was right. So what I ended up getting to do at IIT with, I'm going to drop some names, Bill Ladinsky and some of the other staff there, like, because they were really focused on digital forensics, doing, like, analysis, what was actually cool was every year you would be assigned a research topic. And that research topic was, the expectation was, you as a grad student should go get published. And your goal should be to present that and present it multiple times and get really good at presenting it, knowing the insides and outs. So you would be given this topic. And then after a few weeks, after kind of digging in, kind of coming up with a, like, kind of an explanation of, like, what are the interesting avenues to go down, some of the stuff you've discovered yourself, you would stand in front of the class and they would drill you about the topic and ask you questions and kind of try to, like, stump you. And I love that. Like, here's the thing, like, the program also had, like, a law school component in it. Like, you had to take two classes and, like I took evidence and like e-discovery at the, whatever IIT's, like, sister school law program was. And it was terrifying the first couple weeks, because like you see that in the movies where they just like point at people and they pick on them and they're just like, answer this question. And that happens. And I was thinking to myself, like, how do people in law school deal with this? And then after a few weeks, I realized, well, like, if you just read the stuff and you think about it a little bit, it's not that bad. You just have to be an active listener. So, that's
did you ever get stumped?
Oh yeah. Like, I always get stumped. Are you kidding me? So, that's the thing. Like, learning to fail gracefully was one of the things I learned in grad school. I learned totally to agree. Talk in grad school.
I totally agree with that. Like, the ability to be okay with being stumped is part of that journey. So I want to take a 2-second rewind. Did you ever get your cert? Did I miss you got your cert? What certs did you get?
I have none. No certs. No, I actually, I got an A plus.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure.
That was great.
Okay. I have no certifications. I've created certifications and have none myself.
I was a former CISSP. So yes, you can trust me. I am certified. Although I did let that go a while back for different reasons, but I technically am Austin Powers. So back to your studying for the PhD. Ashley, you were asking a question on mute.
Oh, I was just asking if he got stumped at all. That was back then. But like, we passed it. It's fine.
I've been like several times. Let me say this. I think getting stumped is usually one of the best things that can happen to me because I have to go out, I have to learn and figure something out and grow as an individual, yada, yada. But like, I mean, really, it's just like, it's like, oh, like, I don't know this thing and like, I need to figure it out. Like, there's a part of my brain that's just like, I got to figure this out. I have to learn about this thing and just understand enough to feel like I can approach this topic and move on with my life to the next thing. Like, it's just another stepping stone to something else. And that was kind of grad school. Like, I got to do some cool research. And I know, again, this kind of, some of the stuff led to my next job opportunity. I got to do stuff in mobile lab dynamic instrumentation, which at the time was before there were tools like Frida, before there was a real big push around that stuff. There was 2012, before that,
around my favorite year.
There you go. I was doing all this, doing research on how do these things work and what, like, should people consider this a part of their mobile app threat model? And we got published for that paper, my colleague and I, and it was interesting stuff at the time too, because it was kind of new. Nobody really understood the topic. A lot of the stuff was somebody would write a blog about how they're using a tool I can't even remember all the tools' names now, but these were precursors to a lot of the current dynamic instrumentation tools that exist today. And you really had to do a lot on your device back then. Like Android, you could root an Android device if you had USB cable in the computer, and you didn't have to do anything fancy. You had to just flip a flag. And then,
so Tony, I have a question about this, because you went from being an academic and focusing on academics and physics and, moving towards IT and certifications, and very rapidly made an ascent to, for lack of a better term, I'll call it the cybersecurity rock star style, right? Which is doing some kind of dedicated deep research, writing papers, maybe hitting a few presentations. I don't know if you got a chance to present in a few locations, which I'm sure you'll let us know. Did you bump into, in that transition, did you bump into any imposter syndrome, which that word alone will, I'm sure, irk people. Some people say it exists. Some people say it doesn't, whatever. Did you get to a situation where you're scared or nervous or, hey, am I smart enough to be the guy doing this kind of research? Because I was in your shoes in that I did that same transition, and I have my own feelings about that. Right. But I'm curious what you went through in that transition.
Yeah. I did. Yeah. I feel like there's always this period where the first moments where you get into this new topic, this new world, you get this feeling of like, I can't do this. And then, and there's people around you. Here's the thing too. Like there's always those people around you. Like when I had an IT job, I remember in my first IT job, like if you've worked with early 2000s, like 90s IT people are some of the meanest people you'll work with. Like, honestly, that I think like the, I think the culture's changed since then, but like,
oh, we could have a whole podcast on culture.
Yeah. But like, it's like, you can't figure this out. Like, get out of the way. Let me figure this out for you. Or like, you can't do this.
Well, like we could seriously go down the culture discussion route because I've been in this cybersecurity world forever that pretty much this is me from beginning to now. Mm-hmm. But the reality is that progression, right, of what it takes to go from entry level even, right, or breaking in. Now, you never were like just coming in as an entry level with very little experience. Like you came in with a high level of education. You came in with a goal in mind and like driven clearly. So your experience might differ from others, but you know, I remember mine going from kind of like, hey, now, like I said, I'm the old Yoda, not the young Yoda for sure. but back in my day, when I was making that kind of transition, you know, there was just these cyber researchers that you just looked up to, that you were like, oh my gosh, these guys are a million times smarter than me. And I think the point I'm trying to make here is it doesn't matter your era. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter your education level. It doesn't matter the type of research you're doing, the type of experience you have. There's always going to be somebody that you're like, wow, that's impressive. And I think you have to spend a period of time doing your own work for you to understand that work takes a certain level of continuous pushing and expertise to generate.
Oh yeah.
And you should be in awe of the person for what they created because it's an impressive level of work, but not, it doesn't make them a better person than you. Right. And I think that experience was something that I had to learn during the transitional phase that you're talking about.
Yeah. I think what was nice about going to grad school is I got to work with people who had like really different experiences than me. Like, and some of them were like, they had, they were people who were trying to move from roles in government to roles in like cybersecurity. There were people who were working in like kind of like basic IT moving over to cybersecurity. And like, the nice thing about like the IIT's program was it was like kind of night schoolish. So almost everyone had a job while they were in this program. There were some people who were undergrads who were taking courses, and you could always tell who they were. Like, you know, like they were, you know, like you could always tell like, oh, like they're
babies.
Yeah, they're here to just kind of like fulfill the credit. And then you had like the people who were, you know, grad school where they're just like, I have to get something out of this.
Yeah, the ones who cared.
And those were like the best people to collaborate with because they were like, oh, I found this article, and they'd send them to you. And like everyone kind of had that like, oh, we're like in deep crap and we need to figure this out. And like we're working on this.
You suffered together. And therefore there was camaraderie.
Exactly. And firsthand, you know, as well as I know that, that pressure creates diamonds. It creates diamonds. so
it also creates crushed dust, but it does. That's a whole other thing.
Yeah, but like it's good because honestly the culture in IT and all that at the time I thought like, man, this is like this is terrible, like I gotta get into like something else. I remember thinking like I gotta get out of like the help desk world because like I needed something a little bit more social. I needed something a little more like, and that's the thing, like when I, in that IT job, what I learned in physics, I learned how to kind of like really problem solve, but also how to explain technical topics to people because I did do presentations there. And then when I went to my IT job, I learned to slow that down because it was a like predominantly older crowd with a really like most IT organizations, underfunded, trying to make things work, mid-sized, small-sized business, insurance too, like insurance. So, you know, everyone in there was like the average age was 51 or something. I don't know. I don't. Don't quote me on that. Yikes. But yeah, like it's it was like a you have to take time, be patient. So I learned how to really be patient with people. And one thing I'd say, like throughout my career, throughout my life, and I think Ashley will testify to this, that like when you meet people with bad attitudes, I could respond in a way with a bad attitude. I could respond in a way that like, oh, like this is like, you know, being patient, but I'm always kind of like the opposite of that, where I'm like, oh, like you want to make a big deal about this. Like I should try to make this simpler. Like I should try to talk about this and share this information with people. Cause like, you know, like you holding, like, again, like you lording it over us doesn't make you special. Like it's, you know, it's information.
Yeah, and I think that goes back to the cultural comments you had made, right? The culture used to be very rock starish, where data was not shared. And this is when I was coming up. Data was not shared unless you were part of the correct hacking group and you know, you traded your zero day to break into the latest and greatest place. And you know, the techniques for creating those zero day were held very close to the chest because you could generate another 100 zero day off of the concept, right?
Oh yeah.
And it was just, it's just turned into a very collaborative world. Let me switch direction a little bit and jump to your career stage. And Ashley, if you have questions where we are, feel free to interrupt. But I want to jump to the career stage on pen testing a little bit. Because I come from a pen testing background. So we have similar experiences. I did that for about 8 years in my career. And there's a certain point when you're a pen tester where you find you're doing literally the same exact thing over and over, and it works every single time on every single target. And at some point it becomes a bit rote, right? How did you deal with that kind of situation when you were a pen tester? Did you get bored? Did you, I mean, I can tell, and I will tell you afterward how I dealt with it, which is kind of funny in and of itself and probably goes to some cultural differences between your age and my age. But how did you deal with kind of, hey, the learning curve on pen testing goes like this and then hits a plateau? How did you deal with it?
I think, like to repeat what you said, there are patterns and those patterns are just always present. And you, like, I remember looking at an app and thinking like, oh, it's going to have these problems and you're going to, I'm going to see this. And like, just being like, and one thing I'll say, like, so there's a couple things I did. And it's probably why Ashley and I became friends. I got into writing about it and writing about these things and explaining them to people. And like what I did was I like, oh, I like you find a pattern and all that. Well, guess what? Like if you can figure out some, like some problem is like repeatable across a bunch of things. Like a lot of people don't realize this, or a lot of people do realize this. Most of pen testing is really just writing. Like a lot of people don't know this before they go into the career. If you don't like writing, start getting good at it or find ways to make it super repeatable, because if you can make something super repeatable, then you can save yourself time and not have to spend so much time writing about it. But the manual actions and all that stuff, like you get faster at it, you figure out ways to kind of smooth it out. You know, maybe you look for things that are kind of interesting, or you kind of dig into like, oh, can, like this is kind of interesting. Let's see if I can find something out of this. And you dig into those avenues. But then the other part of my brain told me, well, like a lot of this stuff is like really made to sound more complicated than it really is. And like explaining it like, hey, if you do like, and this is what I, one of the conclusions I came to was the hardest thing in like pen testing wasn't explaining like, not only why something was important, but like how you should fix this. And if you fixed it, what the outcome would be. So I found myself like repeating these same things.
Repeatable conversations. Literally, he'd be like, this is the issue that we're seeing. And I was like, why does it matter?
Oh, yeah.
And down this whole train of why does it matter? And it's like a roundabout like conversation of, well, why does it matter? Okay, so we know why it matters. What do you need to do to fix it? And who do we need to convince in order to fix it? And that's the cycle that I think a lot of just vulnerable management teams probably have to deal with. And so figuring out ways to explain those concepts, he got a lot of practice explaining it to a dummy like me in very layman's terms on why something matters, which I think generally speaking, it just, it carries through just your whole career of being able to explain.
That's the academic in it, right? That's the educator in him, right? And probably comes, like, if we really want to get on the couch a little bit here, probably comes a little bit from mom being an educator as well.
Yeah.
And you growing up and seeing that, right? If you really want to get into the psychotherapy couch. But I ran into those same plateaus, right? You're breaking in the same place, doing the same thing over and over. And you try to keep it a little bit of a spicy edge on it. Like you moved, like I moved from web apps to, you know, binary reverse engineering to, you know, finding ways to exploit actual binary code to wireless and Wi-Fi when that became hot, to mobile sec when that became hot, to API security when that became hot, right? So you tried to keep it, I guess, interesting in that regard. But the other, other two things that I did, which really probably tells you more about my personality if we get on the couch with me, was number one, I tried to automate myself out of a job so I didn't have to do any of the work and I could just press buttons and have it be done for me. Right. And so that's, I spent a lot of time working on efficiencies and automations. I didn't even give it to anybody else because if I could click a button and go take a nap for a half an hour, go watch TV or play a video game and still get paid the same thing, rock on. Right. So
yeah,
that was one thing I did a lot of. And the other thing I did was find the up and coming intern or the youngest brand new newbie on the team and give him all the low hanging fruit. Give him or her all the cross-site scripting stuff that you've been finding for 6 years. And you're like, here you go. Go find all the cross-site scripting in this web app. I'm going to go look for the real important stuff.
Yeah.
So those are the two things that I did to get past that hurdle.
So like this is something I did. And I think, and I look back on it and I think like, oh, wow, what, like maybe I shouldn't have done that. But I used to write blog posts about like the things like, oh, this is the fix for this. And then somebody would ask me, can you post me like a link to like this topic so I can just like understand it better and be like, oh yeah, here's something. And I'd be the author on it. And I would kind of know, like, this was a thing that happened at Now Secure where they would like, we would have bets on like who would get the most viewed blog post of the year. And I would just pick something like, oh, this is something that's going to like, this is something I see a bunch and I'm going to write a blog post about it. And I'm going to send it to everyone that I know is going to need to fix it. And what I'm going to do is I'm just going to double down on my own clicks, but also like, I'm going to fix a problem for myself. So like, yeah. And then I would, and then we'd have these like year end, like competitions and I'd win because of that.
Yeah. Did you ever get to cash in your steak dinner with Brian?
I still need to talk to him. And now it's on my fault. He's offered a bunch of times. I just haven't had the time to get. It is my fault. Brian Lawrence, if you are listening,
So you didn't really need the steak dinner. You just wanted the bragging rights.
Yeah.
That's the most important part. That is by far the most important part.
Hey, come on. Cybersecurity. What do you think? Yes. It's all about the bragging rights. No.
Okay. I have a question along the pen testing vein. Disclosures.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So, hot take right here.
Yes. Thoughts on the process, experience having, because both of you have been on the services team, right, for doing these pen testings and whatnot. Thoughts on if anybody wants to like make it big, right, from these and make splash the news or whatever for these disclosures, like what do they need to do? Or do the, you, should you just toss that dream away and just go along your merry way and just, I don't know, I'm asking like a really broad question here. On what your thoughts are around that.
Okay. So from my perspective, you work at a software vendor who focuses on selling like cybersecurity tooling and all that. If you go into an organization like that and hoping that you're going to do a bunch of disclosures and all that, I would say don't have that expectation. That one of the things I will say that was one of the most frustrating parts of working at a services org that had like application security software was you'd find really interesting things on apps that you weren't supposed to be like testing. Just out of curiosity, I'd pick up an app and be like, I want to look into this one because it looks bad. And just looking at it, I'd be like, oh yeah, that app's going to be bad. I'm going to look at it. And you would find something
And you'd be like, I want to write a blog about this. Like, this is the kind of stuff that, you know, like, oh yeah, like I'll get, like, you know, like, it's interesting. It's fun. It's funny.
You'll get all the accolades.
Yeah.
Of like, hey, you found something really cool. Because that's exactly. Like the zinger, right? As a researcher too, is like finding the really cool stuff.
Exactly. But you aren't really allowed to do that when you're in those roles at those like software vendors, because there's a like a big secret there. They're selling you software.
I'm gonna chuck a point in here though, because again, God forbid we talk about my age again. I think there was a fundamental shift, and this is something I, you know, it's kind of come to me recently looking back at pen testing and disclosure as a historical timeline. It used to be where you ran software in your data center, right? Mm-hmm. People used to actually run Microsoft servers, and they'd buy a piece of software and they would run it on a server in their data center. When you found a zero day in something or found a vulnerability that was going to be a disclosable vulnerability in something, you had to disclose it because there was no auto update systems. The systems were not SaaS, right? They were not a cloud-based system that everybody was logging into. You know, each individual customer installed this binary and it could stay there for eons, never being updated, right? So disclosure had value in the sense that, you know, if the vendor's not going to go out and tell everybody there's a defect in the product, you disclose it so the world knows there's a defect in the product and they can update their product and get it fixed. Mm-hmm. But fast forward a decade or two, and we're now sitting in a situation where we don't run binary code in our data centers really that much anymore. It's a very different paradigm. We actually run cloud-centric code. We rent code. We embed other people's code into our code. And we run 90% of our stuff that we do as young startup companies is all SaaS products that we don't ever even see the code or touch the code. So now there's such a fine line on disclosure where it used to be, hey, this makes sense because we got to tell the world to fix their problem. There's a problem in the airbag in the car that you have to physically replace that airbag. Now it's a situation where, hey, if I tell the world that there is a flaw in Instagram, one, how did I find it? The only way to find it was to exploit it and jump into somebody else's account. Mm-hmm. All right, now you got a big gray area on disclosure that didn't exist. And, you know, there's such a fine line now between disclosure and ransom and extortion. Yeah. Right. So it's such a weird way that disclosure works today compared to what it used to work. When I was at Symantec, myself and more a couple other people, but I was kind of along for the ride. We created a disclosure policy within Symantec because we were doing all of our pen tests and we wanted to be able to publish these disclosures in software that we were analyzing. But that didn't translate to the new world, right? I'm pretty sure they don't have any disclosures that come out of Symantec anymore, right? That thing, the whole thing died when SaaS became the hotness, right? So, you know, the question is disclosure even something that makes sense in today's modern world? Or is it more, hey, I'm going to disclose it to the vendor to get it fixed, and I shouldn't tell the world about that zero day because they're going to fix it in their SaaS product, and poof, it's gone for everyone all at once. Mm-hmm. That's a tougher question in today's world.
Yeah, it's weird how much disclosures in general have changed with the advent of like people are paying now for services where they, you know, they hire a large set of bug crowd hacker one. It's different. And even then when I was doing it, like it was right as that stuff was like rolling in too. It almost was more about, for me, it was like, oh, this is like interesting. I just want to see if I'm able to do these things. And I think that's how most people who get into this space are like, I'm interested if I can do this, more than actually having malicious intent and trying to do really bad stuff. So for me, it was like, I really just want to talk about this because like, I think it's an easy fix for the person who has to deal with it. But I also think it's like very cheeky and fun. And like for me, it was always like, oh, this is like, it's almost more comical than anything. And I'm willing to bet most of the people who are into pen testing or have done pen testing will say, yeah, like the fun stuff was like finding something, making it into a joke and all that. For me, that's how I viewed it. I do think now, like, the industry's changed. Yeah, like
the disclosure process isn't as cool as it used to be, unless you can really point to a super sexy app or something that like is a big name brand. And even then, like,
Yeah, there's a certain level of overexposure to that news that had occurred, right? Like the 0-day news is, I describe it as a flash in the pan type of news scenario. Now, the only time a 0-day release becomes newsworthy and picked up by the media is typically when it's in a cloud platform that's massively adopted. That's the only time you see too much of that news really hitting the wire now. But anyways, you and I could deep dive the pen testing history and topic all day long. I'm sure Ashley has other topics she wants to talk about.
Oh, yeah. Actually, because you mentioned that this was more of a hot take, I think we should transition over to a new segment that we're testing today. The lightning hot take session. Woo! Okay. and so in this segment, I'm going to put a timer on the clock on Google. Let me share my screen real quick. And I'm going to give you a topic and you're going to have not 5 minutes. We're going to make it 30 seconds to give your thoughts on, we'll make it this way. Yeah. 30 seconds on what your thoughts are for a particular topic. So,
this is going to be fun. And this could be dangerous too. I might open my mouth and just stick my foot right up in there. Let's see how it goes. Same.
Luckily it's only 30 seconds, so can't get too far.
I can get a lot of foot in my mouth in 30 seconds.
All right. Since we are in Cybersecurity Awareness Month, the first two topics are related to the topics of Cybersecurity Awareness Month. So first topic, Tyler, want to get your thoughts on password management. How do we get people to use it more? Ready, set, go.
Gosh, why did you stick me with that one? password management. I mean, realistically, I would like to believe that it's as simple as saying use a password manager and having people use it. But I don't think that's ever going to happen. We've had password managers for a long time. We still run into the password reuse problem. People don't use password managers properly. I think the only thing that solves this problem is one of two things. Tokens, actual physical tokens that people can own with their certificates in them or on them, or password management systems or password management based systems that are completely invisible to the user. The only thing that fixes password management is invisibility to the end user. If we can get to that stage, we win. And I know I went 10 seconds extra.
Yeah. Ditto. I think so just a comment on this.
You can just say ditto and move on.
Yeah, let's move on. let's move on.
Go ahead. Don't even answer. I don't mean to cut you off.
No. I just the phrase of passwordless systems are coming has been this it's the the cold fusion of cybersecurity that is always 5 years away and never going to be here. But that's
I'm going to fight you. I'm going to wait for your 30 seconds to go and then I'm going to fight you and give you a counterpoint.
Yeah, nope, I'm gone. That's it.
But counterpoint to that is we've been saying that same thing for auto driving vehicles. We've been saying they'll never auto drive. They'll never self drive. It's too dangerous. It'll never happen. Mm-hmm. Within a couple of years, we're going to have the fully auto-driving Teslas ready to rock and roll. They're already in beta and people are already driving them. I think we're in the same scenario for completely invisible passwords that are token-based. I actually know somebody that has NFC or whatever it is, embedded in their hand so that they can just authenticate against things. I think it's coming.
Yeah, I think it's all going to be in mobile. It really comes down to the mobile providers.
You're getting cut off. You're getting the hand wave.
Yeah, I'm going to stop because I know Ashley wants to bring up another one. You're on mute, Ash.
That's the best part about working with Ashley is when she goes on mute because you don't have to hear her.
Oh, thank you. Okay, we'll come back to mobile in a second. We're going to switch topics. Tyler, you totally demolished that one. So. Thank you. We'll start with Tony on this one. Next topic is the multi-factor authentication. Ready, set, go. How do we get more people to use it?
It's so hard to get certain people to adopt certain things. I'm really talking about getting people to say it's okay for my phone to get for me to enter a code to access an app. No, that's an extra step. the reality is like, I think when those, like when a big event happens, or you can point to like, hey, their bank account got hacked because they didn't enable MFA or this, does help kind of like carry weight behind those things. Like, unfortunately, I think for like security controls like that to really take, like, to really be adopted, unfortunately, like, fear is kind of the thing that needs to be shown. It's, I know it's sad, but that's the truth.
You're saying that we need to instill more fear into people to use multi-factor authentication?
I think it's more like,
I should have put myself in the running for this thing.
Like, how do you, like, I'm going to say, like, how do you educate the older crowd who isn't leveraging that stuff today? How do you make it more seamless? Like, I think that's the same story with password management. Like, how do you make things super seamless, and how do you make people understand why they're important? The great thing is that once a month out of the year, we have Cybersecurity Month to, you know, teach people all about these things.
Passwords and MFA are solvable as a UI UX problem alone. That's my 2 second take. You fix UI and UX and you win.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Thank you. All right. Next round. Tyler, I want your thoughts on the trial for Joe Sullivan.
This one's impossible to answer in 30 seconds because there's not enough data on either side of the equation. What I mean by that is, depending on who you talk to, there's obfuscation of what literally happened. And depending on which side you talk to, you get different stories. I think my spicy take on this particular one is that it's going to is not what happened, but more what's going to happen for CISOs as they have to protect themselves from being in danger or difficulty from legal teams that are not really incented to protect the CISO, but are truly incented to protect the business. And when those two things collide, the business will always win, the CISO will always lose. So I think going forward, CISOs will have to retain their own legal counsel, have them on retainer, have them on standby, ready to defend themselves from potentially litigious companies that they work for. And that's my spicy take on that one. Not specifically whether Joe did anything wrong or was guilty or not, because I don't have enough information.
Tyler or Tony, you've got thoughts here?
No. Okay. That's a brilliant take.
Alrighty. So Tony, I want your thoughts. We'll do two more rounds of this and then we'll move on to the actual game, which will be fun too. And I promise it won't take a long time. Okay. So Tony, I want your thoughts on Script Kiddies.
I abhor the phrase. I feel like it's something that needs to be, like, somebody needs to change it or something. It just sounds so derogatory.
Agreed.
Somebody needs to take that phrase and just, like, change it. Because, like, honestly, it's a positive thing. You should go out and you should play around with other people's scripts. You should try to change them. Because guess what? That's the first way you start learning. It drives me nuts that it sounds like Script Kiddies. You know, it's like, it sounds like tricks are for kids. And so are Script Kiddies. You know, like, I don't know.
Yeah, I agree completely, Tony. I back you up 100%. I think the concept is an antiquated concept from a culture of separation. That's exactly what we were talking about before, of the haves and have-nots with regards cybersecurity superiority. And this was just a way to put others down. I hate the term too. I think it's a great thing.
Yeah. It, like, the big one of the biggest challenges in cybersecurity is like this idea of mentorship, and you can see it in the phrase. Like, I don't think it's actually used anymore. Like, most, like, anybody who sees the phrase Script Kiddies, it's in like the first chapter of like a, like, information security for beginners 101, and like nobody actually uses the phrase anymore because it is derogatory. But the other part of it is it does point to that the culture in cybersecurity has changed a lot. It has, and it's going to keep changing. Like, it's not over yet. Like, it's never not going to keep changing.
We have time for one more.
All right. I think we should move
straight to the game.
Yes. So, thank you. One second. We're going to actually use this time.
That is so freaking cool.
Right? right? Tyler Peterson did a great job.
Super producer Tyler P.
Yes, indeed. Okay, so in today's game, it is going to be called Name That Song. And I'm going to play the song. The first person to raise their hand and answer correctly gets the point. Now, you can get a point for the name of the song, a point for the artist, and you and you can do a point for the album too, if you know which album.
Oh, you're going deep cuts. Okay.
But you don't have to know all three of them. You could just, you know the name of the song. Okay.
All right. Let's do this.
We know the rules. Okay. First song, turning this way up.
Yeah.
Tony.
Okay. I can't remember the name of the song, but it is Incubus. Yeah.
You're
right.
Correct.
Yeah. And oh man, I can't remember the title or the album, but
I can't get to it either.
Yeah. You definitely picked one out of the high school catalog there, Ashley.
You picked one way past the high school catalog, but thank you.
All right. 1 point, Tony.
Wait, you got to, what is the, at least tell us what the song
is. The name of the song is Drive, and it is from the album Make Yourself. okay, next song. Oops.
Incubus, Drive.
Go ahead, Tyler.
That's Goo Goo Dolls' Iris.
Yeah, good job. 2 points. Do you know what album?
Funny enough, the word iris is never said in the song.
Yes, which always confused me, actually, on this song, which is why I could never... If I were playing this thing, I would fail miserably. Do you know the album?
No.
Okay. It was Dizzy Up the Girl. So we've got 2 points, Tyler. 1 point. Tony.
I'm coming for you, Tony. Better get your game on.
Man. Oh, yeah, okay. Yeah. All right. I know this.
Yeah.
One. Yeah.
What is it?
Real Big Fish. It's oh man, why can't I remember the title of the song? And I can tell you the title of the it's the Don't Tell Me. Hold on. Sell out.
Yeah.
And then yeah, see, I wouldn't have gotten title,
that. It sounded like Mighty Mighty Boss Tones to me, but that's because I'm older.
Well, it's all ska, so yes. I can't remember. Is Sell Out the album title?
Incorrect. Sell Out is the name of the song. The album is Turn the Radio Off.
Turn the Radio Off, yeah. Oh, boy.
All right, Tony's up. 3-2.
It's Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Yes.
Californication off of... Californication, right?
And
yeah. I got to see Red Hot Chili Peppers this year.
So did I. Great show.
Yeah.
Tyler, and I thought for sure you would have
got it. He's just faster than me. I got it. He was just faster than me.
Yeah.
All right. We'll do first to 10. It is 6-2.
Go ahead.
Okay. Tyler?
That's Paramore.
Uh-huh.
Misery Business.
Uh-huh.
I can see the scrawl on the album, but I can't remember what the album is called. Is it Misery Business, the album?
No, it is Riot.
Riot, that's right, because it's in like a red scrawl on a black and white pattern.
Yeah. Good job. Alrighty. Tony.
It's Linkin Park. I can't remember the name of the song or the album. Why can't I remember it all of a sudden? Try so hard.
All right, 3-2.
Yeah.
1. Tyler.
I wanted you to give him a few more seconds because I was trying to figure it out too.
it's you want to steal? I gave you 1 point. It's Linkin Park, yes.
What?
Do you know the name of the song?
I can see Chester singing it. I got nothing. I passed.
You just gotta get to the chorus.
I can't get to it. I'm trying. Trust me.
And in the end.
In the end. Okay.
And it doesn't even. Yeah, you're right.
What was the album? Was it? It
Hybrid Theory.
Hybrid Theory. Man, that was another one. That was like fifth and grade.
Sharona or whatever. Shanona or whatever that guy's name is. His solo album was stellar too, if you ever listened to that one.
Mm-hmm. Alrighty. Score is 7, Tony, 4, Tyler.
Okay. I'm getting cheated again. That sounds a hell of a lot like The Killers. Mr. Brightside? Oh, wrong song. Shit. Tony, steal the song.
I don't remember the name of the song. It's like Heartbreak or something, or I can't remember it.
But it is called When You Were Young.
When you were young or when we were young?
When you were young.
Oh, I would have got it wrong anyways, because I always thought it was When We Were Young.
And it is on the album Sam's Town.
Yes.
All right. Score is 7-5. Tony's up by 2. Tony.
Okay, it's U2. Oh, yeah, it's U2, but I don't remember the song title because this is. I'm sorry, Tyler. I feel like I stole this one from you.
You did, because I needed a couple more seconds. But it's U2. It's off of Rattle and Hum. Is it off of Rattle? Yeah, I think it's off Rattle and Hum, the album, right?
I'm playing a, I guess, a different version of it. But
oh, then maybe it's not
on a different album.
Well, that might be wrong.
I can greatest
I'm not a U2 fan.
Sunday, I mean, I can recognize Sunday Bloody the edge.
Sunday, but, is it?
Yeah.
What's that?
It's not Sunday Bloody Sunday, is it?
It's I know the name of the song. It's
Where the Streets Have No Name.
Yeah.
Thank you, LinkedIn user, for putting it in the chat.
Yeah.
No, I still haven't found what I'm looking for.
Oh, oh man. Well, you were wrong, LinkedIn user. Look at this. LinkedIn user tried to help me in everything.
Is this Jenny?
I don't know who it is. Whoever it is, they're helping me cheat. They got a bunch of them in here. I'm just now looking.
Yeah,
they got Drive. They got Iris. Whoever it is really good.
Yeah, they
all
right. Probably should be the winner of this. Yeah, we already won by now.
We need to figure out how to get the actual names of the LinkedIn user
really
in here
so
we
can't see the name.
Oh. I know, it's a bummer. All right, let's go to the next one. That's Green Day all day long. When September Ends, off of. American Idiot.
Yeah, good job. You got 3 points on that one. Very good. Oh, it's Eric.
Woo-hoo! Hi, Eric. Thank you, Eric, and you're amazing.
Alrighty. It is 8-8
tie. Oh boy.
I'm coming for
first
you.
To 10, folks.
Yeah, I think you're gonna get this unless it is the Eric kind of. Thank you, Eric Spira. Thank you. We'll have to play some board games soon, and the Chicago handshake will be on me, sir.
Love it.
All right.
Tony? Yeah, that's Foo Fighters, Everlong, off of... is the title of the album? Well, it doesn't matter. I'm 5-10, so I don't have to remember the album title. But I want to say
The worst thing about the fact that I didn't get that first was I play in a band and we play that song. I should have known it.
Oh, well, thank you for playing along, folks. Thank you, Eric, for joining in. Appreciate you. And I think that's going to be it, guys. I think, Tyler, this is the time.
It is the time. It's my favorite time. And I feel very good about doing this today because he beat me at the game. Although, Ashley, you 100% set him up because it's all in his era. You didn't do anything in my era. And I'm glad he's on
you. I tried to look for like late 90s stuff. So there was like some overlap. Some of this was probably early 2000s. I get that. But come on. You don't know songs from the late 90s? Are you really old?
But if you'd have played anything from if you'd have played anything from the early 90s when I was coming out of high school, I'd have crushed him. You just set me up. Tony, Tony, get off my show. It's been a pleasure.
Oh man, that was fun. I'm really
yet another game I can lose. Thank you so much, Ashley. I appreciate it.
You're very
that.
Welcome. I really tried actually hard to make sure that there was some overlap, but I guess I failed at that. So
well, is that what the one Mewtwo song was?
Yeah, I tried to look like literally I would pull up 1990 something alternative songs.
All right. It was a good fight. I lost fair and square.
Yeah, you're good.
Do we have a show next week? Did we make a call? Do we have a show next
week? Not next week. So our next episode is going to be on November 1st. And then for those of you tuning in, we are going to be going on a holiday break after that. So definitely come stay tuned for our last episode for this season. And then follow us on Twitter, on LinkedIn, on YouTube to get notified of shorts and stuff like that of our new season next year. So with that, tune in November 1st. We'll see you there.
Absolutely.
Bye.